The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
It's turning into our long national nightmare. No, not the coronavirus pandemic. No, not the national quarantine. It's turning into our long national nightmare. When will Dak Prescott get paid? We're so starving for drama, apparently we're willing to create it. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation at 888-729-3776. Coming up on today's show, Michael Jordan, surprisingly emotional when he's misunderstood. A fascinating moment in The Last Dance, parts 7 and 8 of the 10-part documentary series on the final year of the Chicago Bulls dynasty revealed surprising emotion from Michael Jordan. Plus, not to indulge in conspiracy theories and not to recklessly speculate, but there is one piece of evidence, one interesting note, one fact we all have to consider when we wonder aloud, why did Michael Jordan walk away from the Chicago Bulls for 18 months in the middle of his prime? I'll share that with you coming up a little bit later here on the Will Cain Show. Plus, our weekend homework was 5 psychological thrillers. Bubba, Nuno, Pat, Mike A, and myself nominated a movie from that genre. And I have a lot of questions. I have a lot of thoughts. I have a lot to say about who got last and who got first, and who's going to help me understand some of these psychological thrillers. That's all coming up a little bit later here on the Will Cain Show. But Dak Prescott remains at the national forefront. Better yet, Dak Prescott's contract remains at the national forefront of sports news. And this time, it's driven by a quote from Stephen Jones of the Dallas Cowboys, who said the following: "There are all sorts of analytics out there that show if your quarterback takes up too big a percentage of your salary cap, that it decreases your chances to win." That fact, or the acknowledgement of that fact, by Stephen Jones has sent many back to the drawing boards, scratching their heads and screaming into the abyss, wondering what's wrong in this negotiation. Like Stephen A. Smith on First Take. Listen.
Can somebody join me in this chorus to call upon somebody to find out what the hell Dak Prescott is being offered in guaranteed dollars? Can somebody do me that favor, please? Because we don't know. We don't know. Max, I was a beat writer for 15 years. Man, I've been a journalist for 25 years. I have never seen it in my life so long, in my career. I have never seen it take this long for somebody to find out what the hell is Dak Prescott being offered in guaranteed dollars. Because guess what, Max? Then suddenly the suspense is gone. We don't have to worry about analytics. We don't have to worry about anything. Whether it's Stephen Jones or Jerry Jones or Dak Prescott, there's a clear side that you would be willing to take if we knew the truth. And if we don't know, what the hell is anybody siding with Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones for on this matter, talking about caps and quarterbacks when you're behind ain't one in a quarter century?
Well, we don't have to take sides. Facts are independent of anyone's side. If you want to have a conversation about analytics and percentage of the salary cap devoted to the quarterback, we can do so without taking sides between the Cowboys and Dak Prescott. But what I can also do is offer some insight. I can answer the question that Stephen A. asks for a chorus in answering. According to Mike Fisher of Sports Illustrated and 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, an, quote, educated guess as to what the Cowboys have offered Dak Prescott would look something like this: between $33 and $35 million a year to play quarterback for the Cowboys, roughly $105, $106 million in guarantees, and a 5-year contract. That is an educated guess. I'm sure that means Fisher has spoken to some people inside the Cowboys organization. Does it mean it's 100% accurate? No, it does not. I can tell you, I've seen educated guesses about my contract demands, and I'll tell you, they're not close to accurate. The point is, having been on both sides of something like that, as has Stephen A. Smith, you know they're not exactly accurate, but somebody is sniffing around, and they might be in the ballpark. And my understanding is every bit of Dak Prescott's negotiation comes down to years. And that ties into what Stephen Jones said, which once again, I quote, reads as follows. There are all sorts of analytics out there that show if your quarterback takes up too big a percentage of your salary cap, that it decreases your chance to win. We've talked about that on this show for years. A couple of years ago when Bill Polian was hanging out on ESPN, he used to tell us you don't want more than, I believe his quote was, 20% of your salary cap tied up in all of your quarterbacks on your roster. There was a time when no Super Bowl winning quarterback had taken up more than 13% of a team's salary cap. And the high point of that was in the early 90s when Steve Young with the San Francisco 49ers ate up about 13.5% of the Niners' cap. Most of the time, as you look through history, quarterbacks are in the 11% range of total salary cap. Russell Wilson's new deal with the Seattle Seahawks reset that market. Now you start looking at starting quarterbacks getting close to 20% of the salary cap. When Russell Wilson got $35 million a year, you look at that, and that is above 20% of the salary cap, right below once the salary cap gets to $200 million. Now every team is forced to pay their quarterback those kinds of numbers. There's a reason we keep hearing $40 million when it comes to Patrick Mahomes. 20% of $200 million. But the one other thing you have to realize is it's always about how it's structured. We never really get the voodoo science and magic that is the salary cap. I know this. Carson Wentz supposedly makes $34 million a year. But for some hocus-pocus reason, when you look at the Eagles' cap, he's counting something like $18 million against the Eagles' cap. How do they do that? By stretching out guarantees, signing bonuses, and numbers over a number of years. Trust me, I don't understand the black magic of the salary cap any more than you do. But I do know that what we hear they make on an annual basis isn't what counts against the salary cap. And the way they manipulate that is through the number of years on the contract. And thus we arrive at the crux of the issue. See, it's not, and never has been, what we've been told for really about a year now. And we're continuing to be told because it's what drives a debate and a national conversation over a long period of time. Do the Cowboys believe in Dak Prescott? At $33, $35 million a year, I think the answer has to be to yes. If it's no, I would like somebody to not believe in me to that level. $35 million a year in doubt would be a nice position to be in. But that's what continues to drive the debate. Because that's an interesting conversation. That validates our preconceived notions. That sets off little serotonin blades of enjoyment through our brain of maybe Dak's not that great and even the Cowboys know it. That's what Mike Golic Jr. said this morning on Golic and Wingo.
It's never ever on the player. Like the idea that you should ever think of the team is ludicrous, it's laughable, and I'll never really entertain it. But the idea that if you're building a team and you want to say that, that's fine. Just don't tell me how much you love this guy then. Like clearly what's been indicated is you've only got confidence in Dak up to a certain point.
Right.
Because no one's going to bat an eye when it comes to paying Patrick Mahomes. I would say in most normal circumstances, no one bat an eye with Deshaun Watson, but we know that Houston's not necessarily operating in normal circumstances there. So this is a Dak Prescott thing.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this is the...
And a Cowboys thing, I should say.
No, it's neither. But that's the popular narrative. It exists right here in the confines of the Will Cain Show. I deal with it in pre-show meetings. It's what Nuno wants to believe. They don't really believe in Dak Prescott. It's what a lot of you listeners want to believe. They don't really believe in Dak Prescott. It's what almost every pundit now says on a rotating basis from Marcus Spears to Dan Orlovsky. But once again, wouldn't you love somebody to doubt you to the tune of $35 million? Wouldn't almost every quarterback in the NFL appreciate being doubted to the tune of $35 million? No. This takes us back to the number of years. Because that's how you manipulate the salary cap. This is about 4 versus 5. This is about the percentage of salary cap dedicated to the quarterback position. Stephen Jones is telling you the truth. The Cowboys want a 5-year deal and Dak Prescott wants a 4-year deal. Why do they want that? Not because there's a difference in how much they believe in each other, but so that they can keep the percentage of money dedicated to the quarterback position below a certain percentage so that they do not have to make compromises elsewhere on the roster. Dak wants 4 to get back to the market sooner. The Cowboys want 5 so that they can work their salary cap magic. And there's, unfortunately, not much let's make a deal compromise between.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
With nationwide shutdown orders and a pandemic sweeping the nation, I, like all of you, am working from home. I'm broadcasting into a little machine called a Comrex, and about 5 minutes ago, the power cord got yanked right out, and I disappeared on a moment's notice to all of you and in the middle of my thought. But the coronavirus pandemic and the national quarantine aren't our only long national nightmares we cannot escape. The Dak Prescott contract negotiation remains an inescapable drama, unless you know the facts. It's not about whether or not the Cowboys believe in Dak Prescott. As I was stating, wouldn't you love to be doubted to the tune of $35 million a year? It's not just you and me that would like that, but almost every other quarterback in the NFL. This comes down to two other numbers, 4 versus 5. 4 years or 5 years, and the reason for Dak wanting 4 years is to get back to the market sooner. And the reason the Cowboys would like 5 years is to spread out the cap hit as thinly as possible, to live up to what Stephen Jones most recently said to set this debate off once again, to keep the quarterback's impact on the salary cap to below a certain percentage. The long history has been pay your quarterback less than 15% of your cap. Less than 12 would be nice. But in 2020, we pay quarterbacks north of 20% of your salary cap. The Cowboys want 5 years to spread out the impact of Dak's salary on their salary cap so they can handle other guys who come up in the coming years. And if you understand that, you understand the drama. If you understand the drama, you understand how difficult it will be to negotiate a compromise. Because while you can negotiate a halfway point between $33 and $37 million a year, you can't negotiate a halfway point between 4 years and 5 years in the NFL. This game of chicken between the Cowboys and Dak Prescott is about that, not how much they believe in him. And that's my opening take, brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. Now, it's time for your SportsCenter update. The Dolphins have agreed to terms with quarterback Tua Tagovailoa on a 4-year, $30 million contract with a 5th-year team option. A source told ESPN the deal includes $19.6 million in signing bonus. A source tells ESPN's Cam Wolf. Major League Baseball owners have approved a proposal to present to players for the 2020 season, according to ESPN's Jeff Passan and multiple reports. Major League Baseball plans to meet with the Players Union Tuesday to discuss the proposal and start negotiations, according to Passan and those reports. SportsCenter is brought to you by Discover. Get your free credit scorecard today. Even if you're not a Discover customer, it includes your FICO credit score. Checking your scorecard won't hurt your credit. Learn more at discover.com/credit scorecard. Limitations apply. It is the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Coming up a little bit later in the show, we're going to settle down into who got last place in our weekend homework. We do this every weekend, assign each of us a genre wherein we pick our 5 favorite movies from that genre. Who got last and who got first from the genre of psychological thrillers, coming up a little bit later here on the Will Cain Show. But I know this, I have a lot of questions. I have a lot of thoughts. I want to know exactly what was going on in Gone Girl. And I think Shutter Island is better on the second viewing. I have a lot of thoughts about how Silence of the Lambs holds up. Let's discuss all that coming up a little bit later here on The Will Cain Show. But last night I was sitting down watching episodes 7 and 8 of The Last Dance, a documentary on ESPN about the final year of the Chicago Bulls dynasty. And I was taken aback, as I'm sure you were, or anyone watching, the sudden and surprising moment of emotion from Michael Jordan. We've seen Michael Jordan be somewhat emotional when talking about his mother, be emotional when talking about his father. But last night, director Jason Eyre asked Michael Jordan about the idea that he has sacrificed being perceived as a nice guy in pursuit of winning. And Jordan, at first, almost defiantly says there are costs to winning, as I think we would all know and all come to expect from Michael Jordan. But then his voice started shaking. Then you could see almost tears welling up in his eyes. Then, for a moment, you wondered, was the cost too much for Jordan? That he sacrificed being a nice guy at the altar of winning? Jason Eyre, the director of The Last Dance, was on Jalen Jacoby, the After Show podcast, and he addressed this moment. Listen.
It's funny, if you talk of, like, what are the things that elicit that kind of emotion from him? Showing him, his mom, reading a letter home from him, his mom's voice, his mom's face, family elicits emotion from him. And his philosophy, how he lives his life, defending that. He is so adamant about that, that he gets emotional about it. And he said, he finished and he put his hand up and he said, break. And he leaned up and got out of his chair. And I got up. There was a bathroom behind me. And I got up too, and I didn't know where to go because I was blocked by the light. So I was like, all right, I guess I'll just go in here for a little bit and chill out. I went in there. I remember sitting there just like splashing water in my face, like, that's a moment that is going to be a powerful moment in this documentary. I don't know where it's going to go. We just started this process. We were 2 years from even anyone seeing where we are now.
And it was a surprising moment. Again, Jordan's defiant in the face of his critics. He uses most of his motivation. A week or two ago, when we all went on a national conversation about whether or not Michael Jordan owed a greater obligation to a social justice cause like the ones LeBron James so readily takes up, or whether or not he was wrong to say Republicans buy sneakers too, he was defiant. If you want somebody else to lead, lead. I lead by example. If you don't like that, I'm not your guy. But this was different. The thought that some of his teammates might be going, was Jordan an a-hole? Yeah, he was. Is he nice? Eh, not really. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I did a podcast with Cerruti, our old producer, and Smallman, our producer even before that. They have one called Small Talk, and you can go check it out on Apple and iTunes. And they were asking me a little bit about what it's like to not be the most popular dude on social media. And I said, here's the thing. I don't really care about those people out there and their opinions of me, especially ones I've never met. But I said this. I think being misunderstood or people not knowing who you are, much less your character, is one of the most frustrating things in life. I don't have a problem with somebody saying I'm wrong. I don't have a problem with somebody saying they don't like me. What I have a problem with most of the time is someone not even getting close to real reasons not to like me. To totally misunderstanding who I am. And in that moment, I saw the same thing or feeling from Michael Jordan. But that's not the guy who seemed to totally disregard everybody else's feelings and doubts about him. Except in our pre-show meeting, Nuno said this. Yeah, Will, you're pretty good about ignoring or not letting it change or not letting it affect other people out there, meaning those that you don't know. But what if you left and Nuno and Bubba all turn around and go, yeah, that Will, he was an a-hole. Wouldn't that be frustrating? Wouldn't that bother me? Wouldn't that feel like, dang, they didn't even get me? That's what I think was getting Jordan so much. Forget the haters, the doubters, and the strangers. He addressed those last night in a different part of the episodes when he talked about those speculative guesses that he left basketball because of his gambling habit. He didn't care. He didn't care. Those people don't know me and they had agendas. But when it came to his teammates, Steve Kerr, Scotty Burrell, BJ Armstrong going, eh, no, not the nicest guy. That's what bothered Jordan, those close to him. Because he thought, I imagine if anyone got him and what it was about and what it was proven to lead to, not one, not two. No LeBron, you can keep counting because LeBron, the great one, got all the way to six. That was what not being a nice guy was about. And that's got to be frustrating for those closest to you not to get who you are when who you are brought them what they have. Coming up, I'm going to talk to our buddy Booger McFarland about MJ in the NFL. Charles Barkley was on the Lebatard show earlier today. He talked about his relationship with Michael Jordan, plus the kind of guys who had the most trouble with Jordan in practice. I think you got to hear some of that sound. Plus, let's figure out who got last place among the movies in the psychological thriller genre. That's all coming up on The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Michael Jordan might have safely commandeered the crown of the greatest competitor in the history of competitors. But who'd be his closest parallel in football? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Let's bring in our friend Booger McFarland, who's on the phone lines, to break it all down. What's up, Booger?
What's going on, William? How are we, sir?
I'm good. Are you doing the same thing everybody else is doing on Sunday nights? Are you sitting down and watching Last Dance?
Yes, for the most part. I watched the from 9 to 10. I was in my living room, and I watched it, and I said, okay, I'll transition from living room to the bedroom, and I made it about halfway through hour number two last night.
Well, I think that means you safely saw some of the stuff that we all saw, because it was in the first episode where we really addressed how hard he was on his teammates, man. And I was surprised how emotional he was about kind of revisiting, did he trade being a nice guy for being a tyrant, but a winning tyrant. And it got me thinking, Booger, you spent a lot of years in the NFL. You won Super Bowls. You've been around a lot of different guys. If I had to put you to it and I said, who was the closest parallel in football that you saw? I mean, a hardcore competitor, a hard ass, somebody that wouldn't take anything less than, I don't know, perfect and all-in nature of playing the game. The closest to Michael Jordan in terms of attitude, who would you pick, Booger?
Ray Lewis. And I think when you look at what Ray demanded from the guys that played with him on defense, when you look at his attitude, when you look at his level of competitiveness, I mean, Ray, you know, Ray was very, very similar to Michael. And, you know, oftentimes I think people look at your level of competitiveness and what you want out of your teammates as a detriment, when ultimately we all play sports to win. And people can look at Michael Jordan and say that he went too far, and I'd rather play with a guy like LeBron who kind of uplifts his teammates rather than a guy who kind of drives them like a slave the way Michael did. But ultimately, Michael Jordan is one of the greatest winners in the history of sport. So what else do you want? What else do you play this game for other than to win and to be at your very best? That's why I think so many people respect how Michael Jordan went at it. And then ultimately, I think Steve Kerr, Will Perdue, Dennis Rodman, Scottie Pippen, B.J. Armstrong, they're all better men and better players for having been with Michael during that time.
Hey, Booger, I've asked this of various guys. I don't know if I've ever asked you this. You're a teammate, you're a leader, you're a father. Do you think that level of competitiveness is something that Michael Jordan was born with, or do you think people can develop it? Is it something you can sharpen? Can you create it out of nothing, or is it just you're 100% born that way?
No, well, I think, well, obviously you can be born that way, but more times than not, it has to be created within you. And it usually happens at a young age where something traumatic happens. And I'm not talking about somebody dying. I'm just talking about, you know, in Michael Jordan's case, he got cut from his high school basketball team. So someone told Michael Jordan he was not good enough, and that drove him for the next 50 years. Somebody told a kid they weren't good enough to be something, and usually that lights a fire inside of someone, and they just say, you know what, no matter what you do, no matter what you say, I'm going to show you. Because we all need something to be motivated by. Will, very few of us wake up and say, you know what, I'm going to run a 4-minute mile today. There has to be some level of drive inside you, some goal. Most of us are goal-oriented. We want to reach a certain height or prove somebody wrong. That's just the way humans are wired, the way humans are built. That's the that's our makeup. And so Michael is no different. And when Michael got cut from his high school basketball team and his dad told him, hey, you know what, if you look at your grades, if you don't pick those up, hey, if you don't continue and stop fooling around in class, you won't play sports. All of those events culminated and made Michael Jordan the competitor and gave him the drive that he had. And I'm a firm believer that can happen for anybody. We all have to find that one thing, though. What's that one thing going to be for you? If somebody that says, Will Cain cannot host an afternoon radio show, and then you set out to prove them wrong, what is it? We all have it. We just have to find it.
What was that thing? What is that thing for you, Booger?
You know, I look at the world, man, is when people often talk about, I grew up in the country. I grew up in southern rural United States in a small town in Winnsboro, Louisiana. And I'm not the most talented guy or intellectual guy to come out of my town. But what I was given was an opportunity. And for me, my motivation has always been to make the best and take advantage of my opportunity. Like, that's the thing that motivated me, because I often ask the question, why me? Why did I get out? Why did I get the scholarship issue? Why did I go on to play in NFL and won a couple of rings and to move on to a second career in broadcasting? What happened to make me special? And I've never really been given the answer to that, other than I had a praying grandmother and a praying mother and a lot of people that believed in me. But my job is to make sure I don't let them down. Like, that's my motivation. That's the drive that comes from within me and makes me compete and to do the things I did on the professional field and now to compete in the world of broadcasting.
Booger McFarland here on the Will Cain Show. That's an awesome answer, man. I appreciate you sharing that. Let me ask you a football question. Do you believe that there is only a certain percentage of the salary cap a team should be spending on for their quarterback? And I guess that's regardless of who the quarterback is. Bill Polian used to tell me that back in the day when he'd come through the Will Cain Show. I've done the numbers. I've seen how teams spend, 11%, 13%. Now, Booger, it's getting up to 20%. You can see that with Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. And most recently, Stephen Jones has said, we've done the numbers. We got to be careful here. If you spend too much, you actually hamstring your team. Do you believe that? And what is it in your mind that is too much?
No, I don't, because I think that's a GM basically saying, I need the quarterback to help make my job easier. Because what happens with it, the quarterback takes, let's say, 15%, then now the GM has 5% to give him some push. If you're a little cushion, you can make mistakes with the offensive tackle. You can make some mistakes with the corner because you have a higher level of money you to make up those mistakes. When your quarterback is the highest paid guy and he's making a ton of money, that is less wiggle room for the GM. And so now the Bill Polians and the Stephen Jones, they better do their job to the highest level because they can't afford to make mistakes. Because when you make mistakes with a quarterback that's making more money than anybody in the league, those mistakes become magnified. So I think it's a big cop-out by Stephen Jones. I think it's a cop-out by any GM. Think about this. Salary cap is, what, $200 million now? When I played Will, my rookie year, the salary cap was only like $98 million. So money has gone up astronomically. But all of a sudden, GMs are saying now that quarterbacks can't get a ton of money. I just think GMs have to do a better job of evaluating talent, and they cannot miss. And to me, that's what they want to do. They want a little cushion that allows them the ability to miss on a player here and there instead of being able to say, you know what? If I pay my quarterback 20%, then I better hit on everything else.
It's a perfect point. It's true. You have to be perfect as a GM. Also, by the way, a quarterback making 20%, he's got to be pretty dang near perfect because there will be sacrifices somewhere else. I got to go, Booger. I'm up against it. Hope to talk to you again soon, buddy. Love talking to you.
Anytime, later.
Okay. See you, man. All right. Let's do this. If I asked you, eventual 2020 NBA champion, okay, we'll take whatever team we want. We'll call it the Lakers. We'll call it the Clippers. How about the Rockets? If I give you eventual 2020 NBA champion, is there any asterisk on it after this kind of layoff, after this kind of shortened season, after the potential for missing stars for positive coronavirus tests? Or is it just like the strike shortened seasons? And hey, it's in the almanac. It's in the books. 888-729-3776. We'll have that conversation together. Plus, who got last place on our psychological thriller nominations? That's coming up on The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
This is Will Cain.
It's my job to tell the truth.
That's Will Cain's job.
You have to be wearing all denim if
Will
you're going to say
that. Reverend Blue
Jeans. Will Cain, check him out 4 o'clock on ESPN
Radio? 3
o'clock. I knew that. Totally
3 to 6.
3 to 6 on ESPN Radio.
Major League Baseball, the Kentucky Derby, the U.S. Open, the Masters, perhaps most importantly, the NBA. If we do eventually end up crowning a champion in 2020, does it come with an asterisk? Shortened season? Exigent circumstances? Perhaps even superstars missing for positive coronavirus test? Does it come with an asterisk? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio. We'll get to that a little bit later here on the show, but it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Every weekend we have our homework, and every weekend we reconvene on Monday to debate the winners and losers. We watch movies, 5 of them, over the weekend. They're assigned on Fridays. We have a draft. We each pick our favorite from a given genre. We've done heist movies. We've done movies at sea. We've done buddy cop films. And this past weekend, Bubba, as the winner of our previous genre, picked psychological thrillers as the category we would go home and watch this weekend. Here's what people drafted. Here's the nominees. I picked Gone Girl. Bubba picked Seven. Nuno picked Fight Club. And I don't think we knew at the time, fellas, but right there, that's 3 movies by David Fincher. We clearly have a David Fincher thing. He clearly has a psychological thriller thing. And we had 3 David Fincher movies in there. To round it out, Pat picked Shutter Island, and Mike A. picked Silence of the Lambs. I have a lot of questions. I have a lot to talk about. So I'll start it with this, guys. We're supposed to nominate who got last in here. But before we do that, I want to make a couple notes and you tell me what you think. Silence of the Lambs really holds up. Like Red October or Jaws, it stands the test of time. It did not age. Do we agree? Anyone disagree with that?
Absolutely not.
Yeah. And here's what I don't think anybody's going to readily agree to. They might reluctantly, because we all like to make fun of Pat. But I actually enjoyed Shutter Island more this time around than when I saw it originally. Because once you've seen it, and spoiler alert for everyone out there listening who hasn't seen it, and you know how it's going to end, it's kind of fun to watch it and see. It's a little bit like watching The Sixth Sense a second time around. You're like, oh, so they're not actually talking to him. In Shutter Island, you're like, oh, they're all kind of role-playing, playing along with him the entire time. I enjoyed Shutter Island more than I thought I would. What do you guys think about that?
That was the only
absolutely correct.
Great, Pat. Sure, cool. That was the only movie I had not seen. So I was I had going into it, I had gotten a text from a friend saying it was horrific. So that was the only thing I knew about going in. So it was basically, it was my first viewing, so I'm not getting the chance to do it my second time, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed all 5 movies. There was not a movie that I hated.
I'll tell you this. I think there's a Shutter Island haters crew out there. There are people that hate Shutter Island. I think that's true for your buddy that texted you, Bubba. Mike, what's up?
I went in thinking it was easily going to be last, and I watched it, and I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. I found myself being like, hey, this is good.
So Pat,
that was my first time watching it, but I'll hold my thoughts till it's time to vote.
All right, let's do the vote because I have questions as we go. Okay, Pat, I hope you might be feeling a little more safe now. You go into everything with a you know, sense of confidence that is totally unearned. So I don't think you realized you were at threat. I knew when you nominated Shutter Island, you were at threat of finishing last. But here's my hot sports opinion. I don't think you're going to get last. I will vote last on this one because I have a lot of questions and things I want to say. So here we go. Nuno, go ahead. Who got last?
Shutter Island. It was by far the worst movie that I watched this weekend.
Well, maybe not as safe as I thought, Pat. Bubba, go ahead. Who got last?
I'm going to have to agree with Nuno. I feel like Silence of the Lambs, Seven, and Fight Club are in their own category. Unbelievable movies. And Gone Girl is a very solid movie. And Shutter Island is just a good movie. So, like I said, I enjoyed it, but it's the worst of the five.
Wow, maybe you're in bigger trouble than I thought, Pat. Let's go ahead and get your vote on the record, Pat. What did you think got last?
Seven, because I hate Bubba and I hated this category, and it was the last one I watched, and I was bored by the end.
Wow.
By that ending?
Wow.
Not bored by the movie, bored by the genre. I was just over it. I was exhausted.
I will say this for Pat on that. There is some fatigue in doing this. I will say. I spread mine out, which helped this weekend. I really spread them out. Mike A., let's get your
wanting to give Shutter Island a fair shot, I actually watched it first. I thought there were three amazing movies, one great movie, and one good movie. Unfortunately, Pat, yours was the good movie. Shutter Island, last place for me.
Yeah,
wow.
Jesus Christ. Why am I even on the show? You guys are just a bunch of morons.
Don't you start asking that question. Everybody else already
has. Your reasoning was I was mad at Bubba, so I took his.
I will tell you, here's my vote. It's now inconsequential. I vote my movie, Gone Girl, last.
Wow.
I watched it first, and my wife and I said, I almost texted you guys on Friday night. I apologize. I did not enjoy Gone Girl like I thought I was going to. I'd seen it already, but I have so many questions about Gone Girl that remain unanswered. And I don't know if you guys can answer it, but let's do this. I want to talk about this in the second hour. In the third hour, we'll nominate who got first. But I am totally confused by one plot twist in Gone Girl. Totally, by my own movie, which should have gotten last, but it didn't. Is there an asterisk by any champion? Next.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to the Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.